Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. I'm Susan Dobie Chase, and today I am thrilled to bring you Mr. Kendall Donar. How are you, and how's Pensacola today?
I'm doing great, and Pensacola is weirdly cold, honestly. It's not
What's
normal.
What's weirdly cold for you?
For me, it's about 50. That's cold, man.
I'm asking because where I am, it's like minus 15 right now. So, yeah, I think that we probably beat you. But given that you're a Florida native, 50 is probably really, really cold to you as well. That's interesting. Have you always lived in Florida?
I'm sorry?
Have you always lived in Florida?
I have. I've always, honestly, not even I've only moved about 2 hours distance from where I grew up. I've always been in this area my whole life.
Wow. So you have strong ties to place and family? Is that what's keeping you there?
Pretty much, honestly, mm-hmm. It is.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to know that you have those close ties. So what's been going on with you, mentioning Florida and mentioning family? I know that something exciting happened for you in the past 48 hours. With your brother coming home. Yeah.
My little brother actually came down for the weekend. You know, it's MLK weekend, and he took time off work to come and work on production for my next project, and that was pretty awesome. We got a lot of work done, so I'm excited about that.
Good. So you stayed up late trying to figure different things out and mashing things up and then trying again and that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. A bunch of trial and error, but we got it right. I'm really excited about it. His production is pretty crazy, so I'm excited to see how it's going to mess with my lyrics for the next project.
Good. And what will your next project be? Do you have a name for it?
I do. It's actually titled T-5. It's a series of projects that I'm putting out this year. I started last year. Titling it T-6, but it's going to continuously go down numerically till T-1, and the whole concept basically is it's preparing for my full album when that comes out. So
fantastic. So you think that'll be a while? So you'll keep counting down, and then Blast Off, so to speak, will be your album.
There you go. You got it.
Perfect. Hey, I was wondering, there are some people who know you and are waiting to hear some of your work anxiously, and there are other people who need to get a sense of who you are as an artist. Could you perform something for us?
Certainly. I can. And actually, this piece is just perfect for that because it's actually titled I Am From. I wrote it when I first came here for a class, actually. We had to write a poem about ourselves, and I wrote this one. So I'll go ahead and read it. I am from a stone's throw from the beach, but very little sand ever having been beneath my feet. I am from the old Nickelodeon, simple and plain. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Power Rangers, and such are the same. I am from a strong sense of self-worth instilled in me by a mother who made it a point to point out to me those bright white points in the sky at a point when I was unsure of my why. And remind I that the hands that compose their beauty and majesty are the self-same hands that lavishly handed me to her. I am from Sunday school on Sunday morning, sitting anxiously waiting for Sunday stories, spoken the vernacular tongue of rhythm, blues, and rhetorical pourings that pour forth from the pit that pulls at heartstrings and cries out to lost souls, and old church ladies who would tell us that if we came and patiently paid the Lord his due on Sunday, then they would give us a dollar to buy a sundae at the Dairy Queen across the street from the church, which set on the hill from which we look for our strength. I am from can't-miss Saturday magic and puppet shows in the mall, with a handful of popcorn in hand and a Clifford the Big Red Dog shade stain on my white Clifford the Big Red Dog shirt. I am from summertime strolls with my cousins through the projects en route to the julep lady's house, armed with three quarters, innocence in a dream, of quenched fatigue that came like clockwork after an hour's work of mowing and raking the yard of my grandmother's castle, which was nestled in the heart of a ghetto darkness that never seemed to be quite strong enough to breach her stately walls. I am from being looked after and brought up by a collection of community and family, even when I was unaware. I am from hip-hop, blues, rhythm, R&B, pop, jazz, rock, gospel, and techno, because that was all we had. I am from laughing until I cry, trying until I fly, and forgiving until one more time after forever. I am from a legacy of leaving a legacy, and I carry a piece of home with me wherever I go. I am from me.
I love it. I really love it. And you go into so many different things that that you cherish so much. And I know one of them that you hit on there is the church. And reading your bio and things about you on the internet and in other places, you seem to have really started out writing within the cradle of the church. Can you tell me a little bit about where that came from, where it went to, and why you've kind of let go of it a little?
Sure. Yeah, I actually did. I would say that exactly. I started out in the cradle of the church. Back home, the church is a kickback. You know, it's really the community. The church is your family. They're known as an extension of your home. So in terms of like a creative venue, a place to express your creativity, the church was all you really had. So growing up, it was the first place that I could actually express myself. I saw these different forms of expression. And it was, I think it was also this unconditional love and this unconditional allowance, you know, even to make mistakes. You know, you can perform something at an open mic, and if you're horrible, people may not, you know, clap. They may think that you're horrible. But in church, you know, you can do something and you can be pitchy and they're going to love you and hug on you. And it made you want to keep doing it. I actually was a minister in my youth, actually, and I was very into the church. I was very, I would say more so into religion. I was actually doing, my first startings of writing were actually rapping, and I was doing a Christian rap back in those days. And I had a partner, and we were pretty established and doing well, but I had a situation where I just really began to analyze what I was doing and why. It had taken so long. I had just been doing as I had seen and hadn't really questioned it. But when I began to question, it wasn't so much, like I say, it was just religion itself. I just saw things in a broader spectrum, and I began to embrace more spirituality than religion. And it still has a root because, like I say, it's not, you can't divorce your family. You know, my family is still the church family. My family is still in the church. But for myself, I've certainly become to embrace, as my mom would say, I use my mesh. I take the good, you know, that comes out of it, and I embrace that as well. That's why I would say, as of now, if you can hear it in my work as well, that there is this space that started in religion, but it has blossomed or grown, I would like to say, into a more spiritual-based practice.
And what to you is the difference between being religious and being spiritual?
I would say religious, just in my experience, I can't speak for others, but I would say for me, religion was more rules. It was more, you could touch religion. You know, you could, it's tangible. You can feel it, and not just feel it, but you can feel the weight of it. Spirituality to me just is you can't touch it. It can't be boxed. It's something that it touches you, you know, and it moves you. And it's more about not us and them. It's about us. You know, if there is no them, there is no separation. So I found myself to be more in tune with people and other things as a result of embracing that belief system.
Well, that's an interesting way of framing it, because I what I'm getting is that the church feels more weighty due to its traditions and values, whereas spirituality, in the way you're discussing it, feels like it's more freeing. Since you value freedom of expression, it kind of allows you within that framework to be more of an artist.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say that's just about right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. How did you get to be a minister at such a young age?
My mom would say, and my dad, before I was even born, my great-grandmother actually, she prophesied over my mom, and she had this thing to where if she would name people, nickname them before they were born, and that name just stuck. So, like, my dad, mm-hmm. his name was Longboy, and he came out, like, 6'4", 6'5", and she prophesied over me. She told my mom that I was going to be a preacher, and I grew up, like I say, in the church, and I guess other people were aware, so they kind of, that moniker as well. But whenever I was in high school, going into high school, I just had a religious experience, and I just became totally inundated with everything that I had already had been around me, but I hadn't allowed to be inside of me. I hadn't allowed to really embrace. But from the moment that I just went gung-ho. Like I was, like I say, my church was, it's still, so open to youth expression, to where they just mm-hmm. they supported me, and they pushed me along to minister and to find my path. So I honestly still appreciate it. I know that it was part of my path. I wouldn't be able honestly to even speak right now if it wasn't for that time period.
Definitely. And so you've gone from St. Petersburg, where you had your childhood experiences and the church, et cetera, and now you've gone to Pensacola. What inspired your move?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, came from Panama City,
Florida. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. I actually have family in St. Pete, so, hey, I like St. Pete, too. But I actually came here after I finished, I got my AA back home. I came to Pensacola to go to school to be an educator. And honestly, it was partly, I guess by that time, I figured that what she meant by preacher, she actually meant teacher, kind of like a misunderstanding. So, hey, I'm supposed to be a teacher. And I've mm-hmm. always, loved teaching. I've always worked with people, adolescents as well as adults, and trying to teach and learn. And I just figured, this is something that I have over like close to 40 educators in my family. So it just made sense. Teaching is something that's certainly in our roots and I can do it. So why not? And that was the purpose in moving to Pensacola at first.
Interesting. And why did you choose elementary education? I think that it's wonderful that you did, especially being a man in that field, as I don't know if it is that way as much in Florida as here, but where I am, a man in elementary education is somewhat rare, and I love that you went into it. What made that choice prevalent to you?
Honestly, everything you just said, I knew for myself. I just took stock in my entire education, formal education. I may have had one, especially a teacher of color. I may have had one male teacher of color the entire time. Mm. I remember the impact he had on me. And it wasn't even, I don't believe, purpose. It was just passive, just for him to be in the room, for me to look up and see someone that looked different like everything else. It made me want to listen a little bit more. And I had experienced that myself because I did my field experience before in elementary and middle school and high school, and I just saw that at elementary you have such an opportunity to leave an impact that I wanted to be at the place in the child's life to where they can still make a decision about whether or not they're going to buy into this education system.
Well, I give you tons of credit for that, and I wish you all the best of luck. But I know also that you've decided to take a semester off Tell me a little bit about that decision.
It came to me, honestly, the previous semester. I had, been doing the best I could, and at the same time, it was like the things in terms of my art were starting to take off because I do poetry as well as rap, and I actually had started my own, still beginning of my own record label, independent record label, and things with that were going well, and I was just seeing this trajectory of one thing that was I've always wanted to do but didn't think that I could taking off, and this thing that I kind of wanted to do but wasn't, I didn't have the same exact passion to do was kind of tapering. So it just came down to, one, my own decision, and as well as the fact that I didn't have the best last semester at all. So I was like, yo, I don't want to waste any more money. I had a real come to Jesus moment with one of my advisors, and I was like, look, I don't really want to do this right now. I can, I know I don't want to, so I need to go where I actually want to be. And they totally agreed, and they supported the decision as well.
Do you think you'll go back?
I do, honestly. I mean, to be frank, I'm actually only a semester and a semester and a half away from finishing with that degree. So I'm close enough. It's just I know that whenever the time comes, it'll happen, but this just isn't the time right now. I have other things I need to be focused on.
I understand that, and I wish you all the best of luck. That's very courageous. Could you, at this point, perform a second piece for us?
I believe I can. I can. I wrote about a time, and I was thinking back about being home, and I actually have a second home, which is Millry, Alabama, which was my grandmother's home. And when I was younger, it's right in the heart of Alabama, we would come through a town called Citronelle. And I remember being young and having my dad force me to shield my eyes as we came through the city. And I didn't know why until I asked him later. And I would hear him and my mother and my uncles and aunts talk about the fact that the Klan were out there doing rallies, and they didn't want me to see it because I, at that time, had no true understanding of what was happening. So it was this eerie feeling to come to be going home, but for like this brief moment to not feel at home, not feel welcome. So I wrote a piece about this, about seeing that. So this piece is called Fire. Baby, it's gonna be beautiful. It's gonna be a sight to see. Now it's gonna be hard to breathe at first, but I promise it's gonna be all right, little one, just you wait and see. It's gonna be mesmerizing. It's going to be spellbinding and full of wizardry. It's going to spew forth the fuel for the dragon's fire like a hot spring of death wine and announce an altar call for all the wizards within earshot to hear and take heed. Believe you me, you'll see. It's going to be attractive. It's going to be damn near radioactive. It's going to burn hard and long, long after it's been burned out. But in the end, you're going to see. It's going to be relaxing, like the sound of your granny calling you inside from a supper comprised of smothered pork chops, buttermilk biscuits and molasses, freshly squeezed lemonade with ice cubes and chilled glasses and a nice slice of her homemade Georgia peach cream pie. Or the screams of your ancestors' bones buried in the Morse code mausoleums written on the outside of your neck, baptizing and reminding you in cold sweat to be inside before the streetlights come on and the ghosts come out. It's going to be no doubt what this is about. It's going to awake something in your cells. Don't you hear it? The flickering flames and faint concert being played of fleeing roach, grasshopper, and nigger off in the distant southern night wish to tell you a tale. Listen well. It's going to be one hell of a night. It's going to be like if God left the back door to heaven unlocked and cracked open tonight on his way back from an evening of fiery play in the playground of the devil's mistress, only to leave an inordinate amount of omniscient footprints in the anguish and bloodshed that stain the broken clay roads of hell from her doorsteps to the mansion, because God knows everything, and them demons know where they're going. All prodigal bastards return to heaven. This shall be the crow of the law. And if you did not know, then youngin', you best act like you know, and it's going to be snowing. 6, 7 to 11 inches of white privilege suspended above the earth. It's going to be whites-only posters written in black letters posted above a water fountain as you lay dying of thirst. It's going to be blood. It's going to be heritage. It's going to be brotherhood and love. It's going to be enough tears falling from grace to fill 10,000 made in Washington distilled in Mississippi moonshine mugs. It's going to be a sponge. seated on the shoulders of every God-fearing good Christian man and woman, ready to soak it in. It's going to be sin, but we're going to have to do it. It's going to be a 97-year-old blind Negro boy, pants full of his own shit, waiting in a 100-yard reservoir of our own sewage. It's going to be 12 feet high, 6 feet wide, and drenched in lighter fluid. It's going to be fluid. It's going to be music. It's going to be swing. It's going to swing. It's going to sing a song of white light, black fight, rebel might, and good old Dixie. It's going to be Dixie, and it's going to be home.
Bravo. Bravo.
Thank you.
I guess that I wanted to start with questions about, I guess, where your grandmother is and why she's chosen to stay if that kind of racism is so prevalent.
That's actually a good question. My grandmother, she actually passed 2 years ago, and she stayed in that area her entire life. She lived there, and I actually asked her that because before she passed, she was staying with us for a little while, and I was referring to, you know, growing up there, and the basic, the basic premise of her answer was pretty much, it's just as much my home as it is theirs, you know. There's evil everywhere. You know, we almost had a running joke. I feel like almost everybody in the black community down south does that, you know, we appreciate the Klansman more than the, you know, the officer with the badge, because at least we know where the Klansman stands, you know.
Right.
We have as much right to that land and to that area and that place and community as anyone else. So, I think that was the reasoning.
What a wonderful answer from her.
Yeah.
What other wisdom did she pass on to you? And was this the same grandmother who saw you as a preacher before you were born?
It wasn't, but I would say that she, knowing her, she saw that as well. She just was the type to where she was very she would take her time with her words, I would say. That was my great grandmother. My grandmother, Fiona was her name. She gave me a lot of wisdom, honestly. And like I said, a lot of it wasn't even so much spoken, even though whenever she did speak, it was wise. She gave me so much in how she lived. Like, that woman put so many of her children through college, you know, and they're on to pursuing, you know, even still pursuing degrees, I have an uncle actually who's getting his law degree at the moment, and he's already principal at a high school. But she taught us so much about hard work, faith, love of family. Like I said, it was almost like I still view even that place now in Millery. It was like you had to go through hell to get to heaven when you were going there. You knew in certain parts it's going to be what it's going to be. But that place, she made it so much love and home, and everyone there loved her, everyone who she's ever, you know, met. So the wisdom that she taught me was just to leave a mark out of everybody that you meet, you know. And that's what I try to do.
What a wonderful role model. What a wonderful reason for staying. Wow. I also know that you've had a couple of projects recently that that sound very ambitious to me. You've started your own open mic series, first of all. Can you tell us a little bit about that and where people can go if they'd like to attend or even read?
Yeah. We have actually two branches of them. One of them I'm actually a part of. It's kind of the community's open mic series. It's called Open Mic Poetry at Sluggo's Poetry Night, downtown Pensacola, at Sluggo's Vegan Bar, every Tuesday at 7 until we get tired and they throw us out every night. It's really fun, really, really awesome crowd. And I'm actually the president of an organization back in my home city of Panama City called Speak On It. We've been doing that it'll be going on 5 years this year. It's a poetry, but we use poetry as a guise to have a conversation. We actually have the poets present on a specific piece, and then they actually converse with the crowd and have a discussion about the topic through that piece. We've actually done it here on campus at UWF twice, actually three times, as well with the community and the campus, the student life, and on the subject of domestic violence. And it's been a great turnout every time, a great show. But we're going to bring it to Pensacola more frequently in the coming months. We're just getting everything together right now. But that's also a really awesome opportunity in Panama City at the A&M Theater, the last Friday of every month.
Of every month at what theater? I'm sorry.
Well, it's the A&M Theater downtown
A&M.
Panama City. A&M Theater.
Okay.
We have
excellent.
One actually.
And, you know, that sounds like a different angle than a lot of people have. So if you're looking at running your own open mic, you might want to look into what they're doing with the Speak on It, because it's a different angle on a poetry reading. I like that. And also, the other thing that you've started that seems quite ambitious to me is that you have your own record label.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. It actually is, the name of it is Country Walk Records. I guess I can't escape being country. It just, I had to put it in the name. Actually, the road one of the roads that we live on is actually Country Walk. So we just decided, hey, let's just call it Country Walk Records. And it's myself, another poet named Jay Laveau. He's really talented. He has a project out right now. Actually, he was the first release. His project is on SoundCloud. Just type in JJAYLEVAUX. His project is out. My brother, my partner, actually, her name is Danny B. She's a dope poet, dope singer. She can do everything. And we saw this opportunity because we have so much talent, and we were like, why do we need to wait for someone else to bring us an opportunity? We can create one for ourselves. So that was the mindset, and that's why we went ahead and did this.
That's excellent. And I don't have much time. If I want you to read us out of the show, we're down to about 3 minutes. And I just wanted to talk about your moniker for your rap persona. It's different, and I like it. Tell us a little bit about your name.
No problem. My name is actually F-A-M-E. It's pronounced any kind of way you want to pronounce it. And the purpose, basically, in a nutshell, is F-A-M-E is an acronym which means forget about me. Because my whole purpose with writing or with rapping, performing, is that you remember what I said to the point that you forget even who I am. Because the message is more important than the messenger.
Wonderful. I want to thank you before we get into this last piece for being my guest today. Things went so smoothly and so quickly, and I know that you have so much to say. I really appreciate young people and new voices in the community, and yours is important. So thank you so much for sharing with me today, and I hope that my audience will tune in next week for another excellent Spoken Heard. But here is the poet, Kendall Donar, finishing up today's show. And be kind to one another until next week.
This one is titled Acuity. It's from my father. When I was young, my father told me to write legibly. He told me it was an important skill to learn in order to prepare me for the inevitable twists and turns which he discerned lay in wait right ahead of me. He told me to consciously make my thoughts clear and my words aesthetically pleasing. He told me to always press the pen to the page with pure purpose and a refined sense of season. He told me, son, in your writing, he is easily divisible as season, clearly present in your absence, so they will never be asking from whence you go, nor whenever you will be leaving. He told me, son, it is okay to be misleading, but never lie with your lead. See, your pencil is the most powerful member of your body and with a mind of its own, so please be mindful where you place your head. He told me, son, be safe. He told me, son, never be safe. He told me, son, always write with the confidence of knowledge that stems from knowing the fact that if ever you were thrown out while trying to steal third, that you can always run back to home plate or a home plate, free of charge. He told me, son, be safe when you need to and not when you don't. He told me, son, it is the hands that pull the oars, but it is the oars which pull the boats. He told me, son, make your writing a soap and use it to clean yourself of this filth-filled existence. He told me, son, find your place and take your seat and sign your name into existence. Force them to listen. Be insistent, persistent. He told me, son, be alone at times and wait for your soul to write to you. Let it incite you and then write back legibly. He told me, son, write for those for whom it was intended and for those who might one day read it. He told me, son, you know, you write real, real good, but it don't matter if can't nobody read it. He told me, son, slow down. Don't write so fast. Please take your time. He told me, son, a man should always stand like a man, and his words should always start on a line. He told me, sometimes, son, it's not what you say, it's how it looks. He told me, always, son, it's not what you write, it's how it crooks. He told me, son, you are brilliant. You should really start writing your book. I told him, Father, I hear you, but it's not as easy as it looks. He told me, son, it doesn't matter how it looks. Just make sure I can read it.
Excellent job. Thank you again, Kendall Doner.
Thank you.